In fellowship, grab before you the doctrine of slavery, and this is a subject about which there's a lot of misunderstanding. The biblical view on this has generally been rejected, but the biblical view on almost everything is generally rejected, so this should not shock people. Preliminary considerations: A, slavery has existed as an institution from the most ancient of times and has not been confined to any one particular part of the world. B, the first mention of the concept of slavery is found in the prophecy Noah uttered with respect to Canaan. Genesis 9:25. This was following a particular incident. And Noah utters this prophetic curse on Canaan. And so he said, cursed be Canaan. A servant of servants he shall be to his brothers. He also said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem. And let Canaan be his servant. This is a prophecy that essentially reduces the Canaanite peoples, to perpetual servitude, slavery. May God enlarge Japheth and let him dwell in the tents of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant. Although slavery existed on a widespread basis in the ancient world, there's little indication that it was primarily motivated by race. Today, people want to make slavery all about race. It was never about race. It's never been about race. Other than to the extent that, for instance, say the Canaanites, they are a particular genetic stock. They were condemned to slavery in this prophecy. Egypt engaged in the practice of slavery, often enslaving the African nations to their south. Further, they enslaved other nations that they defeated in battle, and they purchased slaves from those involved in the buying and selling of slaves. This was how Joseph ended up in the land of Egypt, Genesis 37. If you're not familiar with the story of Joseph, it's certainly an interesting one. Joseph is a great believer who endured all manner of things in his life, but overcame them all. Genesis 37:28, and some Midianite traders passed by. So they pulled him up and lifted Joseph out of the pit, and they sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. Thus they brought Joseph into Egypt. There Joseph was sold as a slave to an Egyptian, ended up in the service of Potiphar. Following the fall of the 12th dynasty of Egypt, the descendants of Joseph were enslaved by the Egyptians until such time as they were delivered under Moses. Exodus 1, 8 through 14. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, behold, the sons of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal wisely with them, or else they will multiply, and in the event of war they will also join themselves to those who hate us and fight against us and depart from the land. So they appointed taskmasters over them to afflict them with hard work. And they built for Pharaoh storage cities, Pithom and Ramses. But so this is why they've always identified the Pharaoh of Exodus with Ramses, but that's not what it was. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread out, so that they were in dread of the sons of Israel. And the Egyptians compelled the sons of Israel to labor rigorously, and they made their lives bitter with hard labor in mortar and bricks, and at all kinds of labor in the field, and all their labors which they rigorously imposed on them. So the word of God makes it plain that from the time of Abraham onward, the Jews could and did own slaves. Genesis 18:7, Abraham owned slaves. We see this here. That's actually not the right one. I'm sorry. Yes, it is. Abraham ran to the herd and he picked out a tender and choice calf and gave it to the slave. So see, again, they like to soften it down here. It's his slave. He's a slave owner, for God's sake. And people don't like to deal with this because they say, well, you know, that God wouldn't be for that. Yes, he was for it. He didn't chide Abraham for having slaves. And he gave it to his slave and he hurried to prepare it. Also 24:2 here. This is where Abraham said to his slave, the oldest of his household. Again, they'd always like to soften this down because they can't stand the idea that God is not against slavery. This just bothers people. The oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he owned. This would indicate that he had other slaves as well, although not mentioned here. If he was the one placed in charge, he's the chief steward, as it were, within the household. He's over other people. He's a slave among slaves, but he's got the authority. He's been elevated by Abraham for this. Also, Exodus 20:17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. The idea of coveting is lusting after a desire to possess something that's not yours. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or female servant. Wait a minute, this would be a good place to say God's against slavery. Don't own servants. Again, the word is slaves. They don't want to translate it as slaves because it doesn't set well with the theology of some people. The Jews had slaves. They knew they had slaves. Well, slavery was fully institutionalized in Greece by the time of Homer. That's circa 8th century B.C., according to Herodotus, who is a Greek historian. And slaves were involved at every level of society and functioned as domestic servants, shopkeepers, agricultural workers, factory workers, and on the crews of ships. Slavery was quite prevalent in ancient Rome, with slaves making up as much as 40 to 50% of the populations at times. When the Romans conquered the Mediterranean, they took millions of slaves to Italy, where they toiled on large plantations or in the houses and workplaces of wealthy citizens. Two, slaves were considered property. They had no rights and were subject to their owner's whims. However, they had legal standing as witnesses in courtroom proceedings, and they could eventually gain freedom and citizenship. Well, you might not necessarily think about it if you consider the position and the place of women in society. In some cases, slaves had it better. So, that's sad, but in certain cases, they had more rights than women did. Even free women. We're not talking about women as slaves, free women. So, three masters often freed loyal slaves in gratitude for their faithful service. But a slave could also save money to purchase his own freedom. Four, public slaves were owned by the state and served magistrates, priests, and cared for public buildings and works. They could also function as firemen, jailers, and executioners. Private slaves, a moderate income, usually afforded one about 10 slaves, were employed in the personal service of their master, work in the household and field, and could even function as pedagogues. They would employ slaves sometimes for the purpose of training their children. Because a person was a slave didn't mean they were uneducated necessarily. I mean, people could end up in slavery for a lot of reasons. But that didn't mean that, you know, they were all just lowlifes or didn't know anything or any of that. And obviously, in some cases, slaves could be more trusted than other people. Because you at least knew kind of where you stood with your slave. And he knew where he stood. Well, six here, the practice of slavery has also been documented in Babylon, Assyria, and other ancient empires. It was widespread. It was worldwide. And it's been worldwide in modern times. People don't want to talk about it. They want to ignore it. They want to pretend it doesn't exist. But it still exists today. Well, Jay, the modern slave trade flourished in the early Middle Ages, especially between Muslim traders, those righteous people, and Western African kingdoms, whose kings would often sell their people in exchange for Muslim goods. Kay, later in history, following 1400 AD, slavery was practiced in Spain and Portugal. Both nations used Italian venture capital to enslave Africans to support their sugar plantations. And believe me, sugar is big business. Still is. Now, although Britain outlawed slavery in 1807, between 1680 and 1786, over 2 million slaves were imported into the British colonies in the West Indies. So the British are not clean in this, although they may come across as, oh, well, we're above all that. No, they weren't. It was common to Central and South America and was apparently introduced into North America by the Dutch in 1619 at Jamestown. And therefore, people should understand that slavery has existed from the earliest times, has been a regular feature of human history, continues to exist today, and will exist until the second advent. When we look in the book of Revelation, we're clearly still talking a time right now that is future from us. Revelation 13:16. And this is the false prophet working for the Antichrist during Daniel's 70th week. And he causes all, A-L-L, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the free men and the slaves. Wait a minute, they're still slaves in the future? Yeah, still are. And 18:13 here in terms of prophetic Babylon. The passage that denotes the downfall of the USA as taught in other Old Testament passages. When it talks about the things that are shipped to this country in verse 11. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her because no one buys their iPads anymore. Nobody buys their cell phones. Nobody buys their gaming systems. Nobody buys their cars. Nobody buys all the stuff that's imported from Africa and Egypt and India. Nobody buys their clothing that's made in the Philippines. When you stop and look, I bet if you went home today and did an inventory of your house, you would find out how precisely the percentage of what you've got that's imported into this country. And I think you'd be stunned to find out how many of them. I don't know that I've seen a dress shirt made in America since I can remember when. They're just not. And that's true of a lot of clothing, not just, I'm not just picking on dress shirts. So don't, is he against dress shirts or shirts of all kinds? Neither. Cargoes of gold and silver, precious stones and pearls. Nobody's going to buy the De Beers diamonds. Nobody's going to buy the blood diamond, the African gold, the stuff they're getting out of the Yukon and Guyana and South America. And purple, fine linen. Purple and silk and scarlet, every kind of citron wood, every article of ivory, and every article made from costly wood. Teak, all these exotic woods that people make things out of. And bronze and iron and marble. What's the most expensive thing you can put in your kitchen floor? Probably Italian marble. Probably. I mean, there may be something more expensive by now, and platinum, I suppose. But, I mean, who wants a platinum floor? And cinnamon and spice and all the food products that come in. And incense and perfume and frankincense and wine. Do you know how much wine is imported into this country? And, I mean, we have a pretty thriving wine business in America. You know, I'll see people, you say, well, did you taste any of that wine from Florida? There's no wine from Florida. They may make it, call it wine. But it is probably not drinkable by my standards. And olive oil and fine wheat and flour and cargoes of horses and chariots and oak slaves. We enslave people all the time. We just don't like to talk about it. We sweep it under the carpet. We write revisionist history as we go. But our country's involved in this just as bad. We've enslaved entire countries. And we don't care. Again, if you want to read on some of the things that have been done, let me know. I've got some books that might interest you about the conspiracy and when it starts and how it goes and what we've done in various kinds. Becky's got a couple of books about economic hitmen, which I'm sure she'll be happy to loan you. And if she doesn't, well, then she's not grace-oriented. What can I say? But they give a great documentation of how we go in and what we do. And most Americans don't want to hear this. They don't want to believe this, but it's true. And, of course, they didn't like Snowden blowing the whistle. Good for him. They've been spying on the American people. They've been using drones. They've been intercepting cell phone conversations, computer communications for years. This goes back to the 70s and 80s. We're just now hearing about some of it. But this is just the tip of the iceberg you're hearing about. And I guess some of the other countries, like Merkel, didn't apparently appreciate it. That we were spying on her. And so, again, slavery exists all over the world. Still exists today. Don't be fooled by the rhetoric. Don't fall into this. This is just not true, what you're hearing on TV. And again, I love that last skit, you know, that I saw last week on Saturday Night Live about Black History Month. Slavery! That was the gist of the skit. And it was funny. It was designed to be funny. But there was also this underlying sort of antagonism in it and hostility that was designed to get through. Well, look at our vocabulary here. Hebrew, avad, a verb, means to serve 1,096 times. Used a lot. This family deals with the physical aspect of work that a slave performs. Eved, as a noun, a servant or slave. Avoda, actually. The labor or service a slave performs. You might call it slavery. It would be why you could translate that one. Ama, a feminine noun, means a female slave. That's often translated by the term handmaid. Another euphemism, because we can't write the term slave in the Bible. Because when we say handmaid, bondservant, household servant, slave. Every time you see those terms, slave. That's exactly what they are. Shifka, 63 times, a feminine noun. A term appears to refer to a female house servant that had a more exalted position than the normal slave. Although she was always still recognized as a slave. For instance, you see that used in Genesis 16:1. This is when Abraham makes the mistake of listening to his wife and gets into trouble for it. But it's not as though Abraham or Sarah said, in spite of her misguided deal, she didn't just say, well, go out to any of the slaves. She picked an exalted slave that they trusted. Now, Sarai, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. See, we can't say slave, maid. It's a slave. And if you go through the Bible and you take out all these non-offensive terms and euphemisms they try to use for slave, you're going to find out the Bible talks a lot about slavery. Well, really, when you look at the verb there, 1,100 times almost it's used. The family of words there in the Hebrew, that top family of words is probably used 1,500 times. And yet not one time will they translate it slave, hardly. So that's real revisionist writing there at work. She picks this slave named Hagar, who's obviously not just any old slave out there in the field or in the household. This is a pretty important slave. But she's still a slave nonetheless. And you can also see 34. For there are other Hebrew terms that are translated by the English term servant or service, which do not strictly belong to the category of slavery. These would include the concepts of hiring someone for service to work, we might say, Exodus 12:45, or say serving as a minister before God. Now that's not, quote, slavery, but serving as a priest or a minister is a form of service, or serving someone as a prisoner. Daniel 1:4, Daniel was exiled into Babylon, as most of all the Jews were, under Nebuchadnezzar. And he functioned as a slave, and most likely he was made into a eunuch when he went there. So a lot of things, again, they don't necessarily like telling you, because the Bible really contains a lot of stories that people don't like hearing. And they don't like thinking about what actually happened. But this just to me makes Daniel all the greater. I mean, he was a child literally when he was taken there, probably 13, 14 years old. I mean, a teenager. I say child, but he was... you're getting old when you think teenagers are children. You're no longer 15 and a half. You don't use that half any longer. 59 and a half. I only use it for, if I got a senior discount. Greek vocabulary, douluo, slave, a verb 25 times, to be a slave under the absolute authority of another person, whom the slave was required to serve with no regard for his own personal interests. Dulia, 5 times, slavery. Doulos, 124 times, a slave. A male or female without freedom in the civil realm. One that was owned by another and was forced to serve the interests of his master exclusively. Douluo, the verb, to make someone a slave. To reduce to bondage, to subjugate one to the will of another. This family of words focuses on the abject position of the slave. It encompasses the fact that the slave is the property of another under his authority and functions in a servile position. He's not consulted. He's not asked. He obeys or he's punished. That's it. And the punishment could include death. So this was very serious. It was quite something to function as a slave. And you say, well, that all just sounds horrible. Well, to the Greeks, it was. They wouldn't mention slavery. They didn't like talking about it. Because they really felt like it was a reduction of mankind's dignity. Well, in some ways, it can be. We understand. But there are certain slaves, like, for instance, the servant of Abraham there, I believe in Genesis 24, where Abraham sends him off to go get... He's trusted with the most important job in the world. So it's not as though that slave did not have some dignity. Abraham trusts him with going and getting Isaac a wife. Now, would you trust just anybody with your kids for that? I don't think so. So my guess is this slave had a lot on the ball. And he manifests he's got a lot on the ball. And he's a great believer when you read that story. Well, diakoneo, the verb, 37 times. This means to be a servant to another, to act as an attendant, to be a domestic slave. This word was originally used to denote the serving of tables with food or drink. Diakonia, 34 times, a feminine noun, the act of serving or ministry, particularly used of those that execute the commands of others. Diakonos, 29 times, masculine noun, one that executes the command of another, is a servant or attendant. It is used, now this word I would rather render servant, because it's not slave. I mean, not that the diakonos could not be a doulos, he could. But one could be a diakonos without being a doulos as well. He didn't have to be a slave. So it's used technically in the New Testament to denote the office of deacon. What is the office of deacon all about? 1 Timothy 3:8. Well, it's men who are to, by their function, support the work of the pastor teacher by administering the physical aspects, waiting tables, we might say, for the local church. And so, obviously, to be a deacon, one has to be humble. Because it's not, as we know, the Lord's first advent purpose was not to be served, but to serve. And that's our first advent purpose. We only get one advent. But the fact is, we are here to serve. And the deacon is to personify that. Deacons, likewise, diakonos, must be men of dignity. Not double-tongued or addicted to much wine or fond of making money in a bad way, sordid gain. I like it, filthy lucre in the King James. You got to love that term, filthy lucre. It just sounds bad. Well, it should sound bad. It's bad. Can you imagine a deacon, all he was thinking about was, how can I make money off the church? Is that the kind of deacon you'd want? Absolutely not. Well, see, this family of words focuses on the work of the slave, that which he performs. And again, one could be, they're still obviously in a position of servitude. That's kind of the whole point, though, with this diakoneo family of verbs or words. Oikates, four times, this is a domestic servant. This comes from the Greek term oikos, which is house, a slave that operated within the household of his master. The oikotia, one time, referred to the entire complement of household slaves. For instance, that's seen in Matthew 24:45. Let me see. I'll have to look here in the Greek and see which one of those they translated. 24:45. Over his household. Okay, there's a textual issue there. H. Okay. Okay, I'll have to check that. There's a textual issue, and actually in verse 45. But who then is the faithful slave, doulos? As he says here, who set over his household in verse 45 to give them their food or their rations at the proper time. So that there, again, you have the household slave, and in one case you have one slave who we call the chief steward. He's still a slave among the slaves, but he's exalted by the master and given more authority and freedom to function But his job is still to function and to serve the other slaves, to provide what they need. This is what the pastor-teacher is. This analogy here points to the pastor-teacher for the bulk of the church age. So my job is to provide you your rations, your spiritual rations, your food. Using the shepherd analogy, to take you to pasture, to provide food and water for your spiritual benefit and growth. But this is why the pastor better be a faithful. Number one, he better keep at it, not begin to slack off and say, well, the master doesn't care if the slaves get fed. The sheep can go without food for a week. It doesn't matter. So that better be important. That better be in his first, foremost in his thinking. Well, three, definition and description. A, Webster defines a slave as a person that is held in bondage by another. A one whose person and services are under the absolute control of his owner or master. He is property in every sense of the word. Just like you could own a dog, you could own a slave. Just like you could own a car, you could own a slave. And so the idea of property is if you've bought it, it's yours. And you can do with it as you see fit. Now, this is one of the autonomy, a part of the autonomy that our government's trying to remove from every individual citizen. That you don't have the right to make decisions for yourself. We're here to help you. When you hear the government say that, run. Run the opposite direction. They are not here to help you at any stretch. And they never have been. Maybe, perhaps, in the early days of our country. Maybe. But it was quickly distorted. Hamilton told them right off the bat, never establish a central bank. We've been warned about this stuff. The Fed is an abomination and should be destroyed. Obviously, as believers, we are not going to destroy it. We don't have the right to. We don't have the power to. But this is evil. This has taken us off the gold standard. It destroyed this country, whether people knew it or not. This is why you have inflation and these fluctuations and the Fed manipulating interest rates and all of this stuff. It's going to continue to deteriorate because the American people didn't put an end to it. There's rumors, I don't know that it's ever been fully documented, that Kennedy was going to put an end to the Fed. Till that lone gunman. And I watched a little bit of a deal on that the other day when they showed the rifle that Oswald used. And the distance from which he was firing and how fast it would take to get off the four shots he got off. Or three, rather. And he had to get off three shots in 6 seconds from a substantial distance. And when you pull that rifle down to reload it, because it was a bolt action, if you thought you were going to resight and focus and shoot again within a matter of 2 or 3 or 4 seconds, you're insane. It couldn't have happened the way they said it did. There's just no way. But this is how it always happens when there's a conspiracy. It's a lone gunman. It's Oswald. It's Sirhan. It's this nut job. It's always just one guy that takes the fall for it. And so why do you figure they had Ruby kill him then if it was just this one guy? Why'd that happen? And how did that happen? You talk about no security. You got a prisoner that you can't protect. And so, you know, all these questions pop up and have never been effectively answered. Never will be. Because I don't believe that one person could pull off what they attributed to Oswald. I don't even think he could have gotten off the shots. And again, you're talking about, now I saw this, you know, of course, there's some of these people, you got to watch out for this stuff. Like this Alex Jones and some of these people like that out there, they're fringe in my opinion. I watched a little deal on that, the blurb on the thing about Kennedy, and they said, now look at this. This tree is blocking the view. Do they think I'm stupid? Do they think that that tree wasn't smaller 40 years ago? Just because it's blocking the view now. So you got to watch. I mean, you got to be careful out there with some of this stuff. Because people go way overboard with this conspiracy stuff. And you got to watch it. Because they will throw stuff at you. And if you're not thinking, you'll think, oh yeah, that tree blocked the view. Well, that tree was way smaller 40 years ago, believe me. 41 years now. Well, it's a little over. Or 40, I guess, just turned 40 last year. Well, anyway, so the point is here, I forgot how I got off on that, but But anyway, watch the conspiracy nuts, as I like to call them, because they'll present stuff that's just not documentable. But looking at the gun, looking at the distance, looking at all that, that one person could pull all this off, no way. It's just no way. When have you ever heard of one, you know, if one person could take out the president, don't you think some nut job would have done it by now? I mean, any president, not just Obama, any of the previous presidents. You don't think there were people that wanted to kill Clinton? But then you go back and do some research on Clinton. Do you know how many dead bodies are in this guy's closet? Between him and Hillary, how many people have ended up dead that did business with them? I mean, it's shocking. But most people don't, they're not aware of it. They don't research it. They don't care. Well, again, as a pastor, your job is to prepare for the sheep, to provide for them, to keep them hopefully on a normal track. Avoiding, you know, either the, we got to swallow everything we hear from the media, to the extreme fringe groups. You know, you've got these extremes that you've got to avoid. Well, a slave was actually owned by another person. The slave was the property of the master and had no personal freedoms unless he was granted them by the master. See, the term slavery can be used as follows. One, the practice or institution of owning or keeping slaves. Two, the condition of one that is a slave. He's in slavery. Three, the hard work or labor that is performed by slaves. We might call it drudgery or slavery. Well, D, the institution and practice of slavery in most nations is marked by the following concepts. One, the absolute authority of the owner or master over the slave. Two, the absolute lack of freedom on the part of the slave. Three, since the above two factors were part of slavery, the slave could be bought, sold, or traded at the will of the master. And he had no say-so in it. That was just the way it was. Your property. The fact that obedience was not an option. It was demanded. And when it was not rendered willingly, it could be coerced. We can make you obey. Whether that demanded a beating, a serious injury, or maybe even if a slave was recalcitrant, they might kill him. And they had the perfect right to, and they weren't charged with any crimes. Now, obviously, one of the things we're going to see is that God legislated this. God did not allow people to just engage in this willy-nilly. And there were laws about it that were incorporated into the Mosaic system. So five, hard work was generally the lot of the slave. Very often the work could be tedious, menial, boring, and demeaning. And so when one considers, you know, when you think about your job and you get tired of your boss, is he beating you? Has he sold you to someone else? Has he completely removed all your freedoms? And so we use this master-slave analogy as one that fits the employer-employee relationship, but obviously it breaks down. Because your boss doesn't own you, you could quit, you could walk off the job. You couldn't do that as a slave. You could try it, walk off the job, but if you got caught, well, too bad. Although slaves were not always treated well by their masters, on the whole, they were often better off than day laborers. F, slaves had their food, clothing, and housing provided, which provided a good deal of security for the slave. Sometimes this was accompanied by a small wage as well. It's not as all slaves work for free either. They could choose to pay their slaves if they did good jobs. And so there became motivation for a slave to be a good slave. It served him as well. Well, gee, when one subtracted the cost of food, clothing, and housing from the wages of a day laborer, he was often left in a worse financial condition than that of a slave, even though he's free. People say, well, I'd rather be free. Well, you're free, but you're homeless. Now, which is better, having a home and a roof over your head, or having your freedom and being broke all the time? So there's trade-offs here, as you can see. Well, Roman numeral 4 here, there were various ways in which one could be reduced to the status of slavery. The earliest and most common means of procuring slaves was through the principle of warfare and military conquest. Let's look at Genesis 14:12. This was one in which Abraham this is where the king of Sodom, The king, and back in verse 8, if you to get the context here, the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Admah, and the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela came out, and they arrayed for battle against them in the valley of Siddim, against Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of the Goyim. And Amraphel, the king of Shinar, that's ancient Sumer, and Arioch, king of Elasar. Four kings against five. And guess what? The four kings won. Chedorlaomer and his men, they beat these kings back. And the valley of Siddim was full of tar pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled. And they fell into them. But that's a way to die, isn't it? But those who survived fled to the hill country, and they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their food supply and departed. And they also took Lot. Well, Lot's headed for slavery. Abraham's nephew. And his possessions and departed, for he was living in Sodom. And you can also see Deuteronomy 20, 10 through 14. B, slaves could either be purchased domestically or acquired from surrounding nations that engaged in slave trading. Exodus 21, 2. So there's a number of ways one could end up a slave, as we're going to see. But again, slavery was much more common than people want to let on. And as the revisionist historians try to whitewash, this was a very common practice. Exodus 21:2, if you buy a Hebrew slave, he will serve you for 6 years, but on the seventh he will go out as a free man without payment. If he comes alone, he shall go out alone. If he is the husband of a wife, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master gives him a wife, and she bears him sons and daughters, the wife and her children belong to the master. So, well, geez, that isn't fair. Break up a marriage and all that? Well, they're slaves. They're property. I mean, if you had dogs, he could keep the female and the pick of the litter. Well, why would that be any different with humans? Because they're just equally property at that point. That's all they are. And so she shall belong to the master, and he will go out alone. But if the slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out as a free man, then he could become a perpetual slave. He could choose to be. And you say, well, why would people do that? Well, maybe his niche was such that was the best deal. You say, well, the best deal was slavery in some cases. Yes, it was. The best deal was slavery. Particularly if he had established a family and a home and all of that in this inside his master's environment. Well, so also see Leviticus 25, 44. One could be born in a condition of slavery. We saw that in Exodus 1, 7. The Jews that came down to Egypt, all their offspring were born as slaves once the Egyptians subjugated them. And so they're born into that condition. Moses was born a slave. But he didn't become a slave. He was plucked out by the river in a stroke of luck by Pharaoh's daughter. And you can also see Exodus 21:4. So the children in that relationship we just saw are born as slaves. They're slaves. They don't have a choice in the matter. You're just born into that condition. D, the citizen that became insolvent for any reason and could not pay his debts could be sold into slavery. 2 Kings 4:1. And this is how some people end up in slavery, was through what we would call the modern idea of bankruptcy. They became bankrupt and they couldn't pay their bills. Well, guess what? Everything's sold off. Can you say Madoff? A certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried to Elisha, your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that your servant feared the Lord. And the creditor has come and take my two children to be his slaves. And while she's bemoaning this fact, Elisha doesn't stop and say, well, he doesn't have the right to do that. Or that's wrong, he shouldn't do that. No, it was perfectly permissible. And in fact, if this was practiced today, well, maybe people would be less inclined to spend above their means. If people were reduced to slavery for their stupidity, one of the things that we certainly know from history, and that even most unbelievers out there who have any sense, economists will tell you, that when you empower people through this stupidity with their money, they're destined to keep making the same mistakes. I've watched people who couldn't manage money, and guess what? After 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, they still can't manage money. You've got to learn how to do that and do it. But, I mean, you don't want to end up as a slave. Of course, nowadays, we won't do that. They used to have a deal called debtor's prison. They'd throw you in there because you couldn't pay your bills until you... And that was taught in some of the parables. Jesus didn't say, oh, that's a horrible institution. He just acknowledged that it was real and moved on. So, your creditors come. And that's it. You can also see Nehemiah 5, 3 through 8. One could be sold as a slave in order to make the appropriate restitution for a crime he had committed. Exodus 22, 3 and 4. This is a great policy. We should be doing this in America all the time. I mean, Madoff should be paying these people back. Put him to work. I mean, I don't care if he makes 25 cents an hour. Everything he makes goes back to these people he robbed. And if we did this to enough people, we made a few examples of these people. I guarantee you people will think long and hard before they do. But see, as Solomon bemoaned in his day, and it's even more true in ours, because the judgment is not brought on a criminal act immediately. The hearts of the sons of men are fully set to do evil. Because justice is delayed constantly. You know, I heard of this, and of course they always make a big deal out of this stuff. I had to spend the last 2 weeks listening about Carly Brucia again. And this idiot's still alive. This idiot's still on appeal. He should have been dead years ago. They've got him on the surveillance tape. We know it was him. So he's trying to get off on a technicality. Oh, I could solve this quick. Let's solve this one. But no, our stupid society, we're gonna quote, give them every chance to prove their innocence. Even when we know they're guilty. So that's bad enough. And then to have to hear about it's just discouraging. That this idiot's still alive? You got to be kidding me. And guess what? This is typical. This isn't unusual. 10, 15, 20 years on death row, appealing, appealing, appealing. Well, Satan's running out of time on his appeal, and that's going to put an end to it for a bunch of them. Exodus 22, 3 and 4. But if the son... well, first it's about a thief breaking in. If a thief is caught breaking in, and he is struck so that he dies, you don't have to interview him at the door. Hello, brother. What are you here for? You know, you don't have to do any of that. You can kill him on the spot. And you should be allowed to kill him on the spot. If somebody enters your house illegally, they can die on the spot. And you should be justified in killing them. That's the true stand your ground law. Not that you're out and you get popcorn thrown at you and you decide you're going to kill somebody. So there will be no blood guiltiness. But if the sun has risen on him, there will be blood guiltiness on his account. But he will surely make restitution. If he owns nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. And if what he stole is actually found alive in his possession, whether it's an ox, a donkey, or a sheep, he will pay double. Well, that's the kind of laws we need. Right there. You steal something, first, you break into my house, I can kill you on the spot, no questions asked. That's it. Expect you to come in at night, I'm not going to interview you. Hello, my name's Ron. What would you like? You need anything to drink? You know, no, absolutely not. Well, you can also see Matthew 18:25 there. One could voluntarily sell himself into slavery. Genesis 47 is an interesting one. You think, well, why would people do that? Because sometimes the lot of the slave was better than the lot of the free man. Genesis 47, 18 and 19. This gets into the time, back in verse 13, from context, there was no food in the land. This is in Canaan, because the famine was very severe. So that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished because they're of the famine. And Joseph, of course, Joseph's an entrepreneur, and he's really made out on this deal for Pharaoh. He served Pharaoh in this deal. But verse 18, when the year was ended, they came to him the next year and said, "We will not hide from my Lord that all our money is spent, and the cattle are my Lord's." See, Joseph bought up everything in the land of Egypt by selling him food that he had laid up ahead of time because God had given him the revelation that, hey, there's going to be a 7-year famine. And because of this 7-year famine, there are going to be a bunch of people who aren't going to be able to eat. Well, Joseph planned ahead. He knew it was coming. So he laid up great stores of food, storehouses. And they would come and they would sell off their herds. I mean, what good are your cattle if they can't eat? You can't keep them. You can't afford them. You're just going to have to either slaughter them off, or if you can't eat, then you're going to have food. Well, when that year was ended, they came to him the next year and said, "We will not hide from my Lord that our money is all spent, and the cattle are my Lord's. There is nothing left for my Lord except our bodies and our hands. So why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for food, and we and our land will be slaves to Pharaoh. Give us seed that we may not die and that the land may not be desolate." So Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For every Egyptian sold his field because the famine was severe on them. Thus the land became Pharaoh's. As for the people, he removed them to the cities from one end of Egypt's border to the other. Relocated. You know what he said? There's a famine. Go where the food is. And he relocated them. He just said, the food is not where you're at. You're going to have to go there. And so they had to sell off their property and move and become slaves of Pharaoh perpetually at that point. Well, it beats dying, doesn't it? You just want to slowly starve to death? And that was their choice. That was what they were faced with. So they sold themselves as slaves. You can also see, let's look at Leviticus, because again, this was a part of the Mosaic Law. So this has now been codified as a principle that is to be observed. Leviticus 25:39. If a countryman of yours becomes so poor with regard to you that he sells himself to you, you will not subject him to a slave service. There was a certain, see, and this was legislated. Jews had to treat Jews differently. There were different laws for them. He shall be with you as a hired man, as if he were a sojourner. He will serve you until the year of the Jubilee, and then he can go out free. See, Jubilee, every 50th year, they were all bets were off. All debts were forgiven. Everybody started with a fresh slate every 50 years. So, that was a part of the Mosaic deal. Well, one, if a Jew sold himself into slavery to another Jew, he was to be treated somewhat differently than a foreign slave. He was not to be subjected to forced labor. In other words, you didn't put him out in the field with the back-breaking stuff that other slaves did. You put him in a position where he could serve and he didn't have to be subjected to such rigorous conditions. But he was treated like a hired man and released in the year of Jubilee. Slaves could be received from someone else as a gift. Now that would be a good one, I guess. What'd you get for Christmas? A slave? You can't say that in America. You can't say slave in America. You can't say bomb on an airplane. Genesis 29:24. And Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a, can't say it, as a slave. Not as a maid, as a slave. And slaves, like other property, could be inherited. Well, that you might imagine is true enough of any property through the will system, through inheritance. One could inherit his father's slaves. And Leviticus 25:44, as for your male and female slaves, hey, they did it. They translated it slaves, whom you may have. You may acquire male and female slaves from the pagan nations that are around you. So the Jews had an A-OK from God to go buy slaves. So now, if that's true, how can God be against slavery? How can he grant them the freedom to do that and say, well, I'm against slavery? He didn't ever say he was against it. He said, in fact, he took it as an institution. So then, too, it is out of the sons of the sojourners who live as aliens among you that you may gain acquisition, and out of their families who are with you, whom they will have produced in your land, they also may become your possession, and you may even bequeath them to your sons after you to receive as a possession. You can use them as permanent slaves. But in respect to your countrymen, the sons of Israel, you shall not rule with severity over one another. See, again, there were different laws for the Jews, as we would understand. Well, one could be kidnapped and sold into slavery. Exodus 21:16. Essentially, that's what happened to Joseph. His brothers kidnapped him. I mean, that way they don't talk about it in those terms, but that's basically what happened. and then sold him off to the Ishmaelites. He who kidnaps a man, whether he sells him or not. Well, this implies he could sell him. That was at least one of his options. He is found in his possession. He shall surely be put to death. See, kidnapping's a capital offense. And it should still be today. Anybody that engages this, they should have been killed. You don't debate with these people. If these people are that, have no regard for human rights whatsoever, well then they forfeit their right to live. And they should forfeit their right to live. So any kidnapper should be put to death immediately. No appeal, no nothing. You catch him with these people, you die. That guy up in Cleveland, well, he died anyway. But people that have done this over the years, they should be executed. Some, you put these on TV. This will replace the Olympics. It'd be more interesting too. I mean, did you see the conditions over there? This guy, this poor bobsledder or whatever he was, had to break out of his room because he couldn't get the door open. This is pathetic. This is Russia at its best. I'm planning my vacation there. Deuteronomy 24/7. Why would I want to go to Florida when I could go to sunny Russia? Jay, it should be evident from the Mosaic law that kidnapping people and engaging in slave trading was prohibited. Well, I think that verse right there tells you it's prohibited. It's a capital offense. This is further confirmed by Paul as being an activity that is opposed to sound teaching. 1 Timothy 1:10. Realizing, he uses a play on words here because there are many people who don't do this. In verse 8, we know that the law is good if one uses it legally. Yeah, that's true. But realizing that the law is not made for the righteous person. In other words, the law is not made for the law-abiding citizen. Now, you constantly hear this. We need more laws, more laws, more laws, more laws. Guess what? You can't legislate morality. We've got laws against everything already. It's just that the laws aren't enforced. And then when some tragedy happens, some woman whose husband gets killed or something runs to Congress and whines and complains, and then they pass a new law, or to the state senate or whatever it is, whether it's statewide or nationwide. We got a new law, the Baker Law. Well, guess what? It was illegal to shoot people in the head before that. We don't need a new law. We got laws. The laws just aren't enforced. That's the problem. Well, the law's not made for the law-abiding person. Their righteous means in this context, law-abiding. That he's a person who respects privacy and property and people and treats them like that. He doesn't steal. He doesn't kill. He doesn't kidnap. He doesn't rape. He doesn't do any of this stuff. But it's made for those who are lawless and rebellious. And then he talks about the kinds of people, ungodly and sinners, unholy and profane. Those who kill their fathers or mothers. Do you need a law to tell you that you shouldn't kill your parents? Yeah. I mean, I kind of knew that growing up. Nobody told me, hey, there's a law against killing your parents. But I sort of naturally assumed there was. You know? Now, killing your kids, that's a different deal. There's laws against that, too. You can't kill them. You may want to sometimes. Every normal parent does. This is the parent's dirty little secret. We all want to kill our kids at one time or another. Well, no, we didn't act on it, you know, but, well, and what's it for? Immoral murderers, immoral men, homosexuals. There's laws against homosexuality in almost every state. Do you know why? It's a crime against God and man. And the Mosaic Law legislated against it. And kidnappers, and liars, and perjurers, and whatever else. And Paul says this list is not complete, by the way. Whatever else is contrary to sound teaching. We would teach you to respect the rights of God and men. That's what sound teaching does. Treat people with dignity and respect and do the right thing by them. Okay, well, our time is gone. We will stop there and probably, hopefully, I don't know, we may be able to get through this on Tuesday because we got another doctrine we need to review too in Apostles. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for this time together. We pray that you would sanctify this information to our souls. In Christ's name, amen.